Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who has been to church in the last 24 hours. It's Richard Herring! Thank you very much! Hello, my fine friends! Welcome. I want to say welcome to Series 25 of Rahalas, but we're going to... Oops, yeah, well done. I messed up. But this one isn't going out first in the series, so it's welcome to Episode 2 of Series 25, motherfuckers, of Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I can call it that, can't I? But I was... Because we're in the Leicester Square Theatre. I'll get used to it again. It's a little while. It's 2 weeks since I did this. Been a little longer since I've been at Leicester Square. I was talking to Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie the other day. They call it Rahalastapas. Remember them? Remember them? Yeah, good. That's good. It was a good one. I was pleased with that myself. What's been going on is I was tricked into going to a church service yesterday because my friend's child was being christened and I thought we'd been invited to a christening, but they were tricky, aren't they, the Christians? They're tricky. It wasn't just a christening. They stuck it in the middle of a service, so I had to sit through the whole thing. And then once it was over, I couldn't leave. Couldn't just leave. I had to sit through a load of other fucking shit as well. So it's... And it was quite triggering for me because as a kid I used to go to church and I didn't like it. And there were nicer people than the people in my church in Cheddar. It didn't feel quite as awesome. Maybe, I think when you're a kid it's so awful having to sit through a boring church service, and when you're older the minutes go a little bit quicker. But there was the one bit that upset me of the church service was that they said prayers for, people around the world who are going through a difficult time
And the first one, the first prayer they gave was to Boris Johnson and his family. Going through a difficult period, and they were just about to, exactly. I didn't think that was appropriate. And then whoever was to take over, they gave a prayer to them. I felt that was a bit partisan and not. And I thought that God, you know, probably has his eye on Johnson anyway. He doesn't need to prepping arrangements for his eternity. I'm going to be in the same place as Boris Johnson, which has made me think about changing my ways. That's a punishment. It struck me that those prayers that they give are just sort of ancient versions of the kind of concerned tweets you get on Twitter when something bad happens. It's just, oh, you know, I hope everyone in Pakistan's okay because of the floods. That's how I've done my bit. Because that's all it was. Oh, you know, God, you know, look after the people in Pakistan. I've done my bit now because I've prayed for those people. I don't have to actually... the people in Ukraine, I hope... I mean, God has got the power to actually stop those things happening at all. It seems weird to be going to God, oh, please look after the people. Like, God hasn't noticed. Oh, thanks. Why didn't anyone tell me about Pakistan? This is the first prayer I've had about this. I should sort that out, all those people being drowned and stuff in Ukraine. It could be that, couldn't it? I did check the news after we came out of the church, and it was still the same. So the prayer worked about as well as your concerned tweets about anything. The main thing I wanted to talk about one of the hymns they sang was "Oh Jesus, I Have Promised," which we used to sing at school. Now there's not enough of you maybe to make this work, but can you all sing for me "Oh Jesus, I Have Promised"? Do you know who knows that? Who knows the hymn "Oh Jesus, I Have Promised"? Shout out! Oh, not that many of you. I won't do it then because there's not enough of you know it. But they didn't. I was aware of two tunes to "Oh Jesus, I Have Promised." Right? There's "Oh Jesus, I Have Promised to Serve Thee to the End." Okay, and that's the traditional. Don't shake your head at me. The problem with you young kids is, you know, you were brought up not to have religion in school, so you didn't have to do it. But then when I was a kid at Fellings Middle School, they had a different tune, and it was the one assembly you'd look forward to because it was the slightly cool... It was almost like a pop song. It was like, "Oh, Jesus, I have promised to serve thee to thee," and bum, 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 bum. In this church service, they did a third tune. It was a different... I can't even tell you what the tune was. Why is "Oh Jesus, I Have Promised"? And I'm aware now, I've asked if you've heard of it, that this is a redundant piece of observational comedy. Why? I asked Eleanor Morton backstage if she said she hadn't heard of it. So that should have been the key. I was thinking of doing an hour-long show about "Oh Jesus, I Have Promised." I genuinely was. For one person. For the one person. Well, that's how things are going, David. So yeah, it's but it's just that you're allowed to do any tune. "Oh Jesus, I have promised to serve thee to the end." No, just anyone you're allowed. What's going on with "Oh Jesus, I have promised"? That's my question to you. All right, I can do it to anything. I'm good. That's what I'm going to make my guests sing it. Yeah. I've got the lyrics here. I'll do the whole thing to you, just to punish you. Does it work? Yeah. Okay, you've done it. Let's see. "Oh Jesus, I have promised to serve thee to the end." It works too well. "Be thou forever dear me." Isn't it? Well done, mate. I was going to make it unnecessarily complicated for people, but that is good. So anyone who wants, you can just do it. You can do "Yesterday." "Oh Jesus." Fuck it. I can't be bothered. Can't be bothered with the copyright issues. I did "Happy Birthday" though, so I don't know what I'm thinking. Anyway, let's crack on. I had more about "Oh Jesus, I Have Promised." Might just do it. It shows that, you know, when you go into religion, it's sort of the self-blame of religion I don't like, and that's in "Jesus, I Have Promised." "I see the sights that dazzle, the tempting sounds I hear." Would you imagine those sounds are? I can't think what sound. A small moment. Well, that's one thing. All I can think is it's like listening through someone's keyhole at someone else having sex, which isn't a very religious thing to... Oh, I can hear some tempting sounds. I'm not really tempted by sound, are you? I'm not... There's a lot of audiophiles listening to this. Here we go. Of course I am. "My foes are ever near me, around me and within." It's like saying there's no fucking escape from you. It's inside. It's saying that sin is implicit. It's inside you. There's nothing you can do. And so rather than saying, oh, that probably means the things that are... said to be sins are just natural instincts that we shouldn't punish people for. No. No, we're going to... All right, I'm cross about having gone to a church service. Okay, we're going to crack straight on. We'll forget all about this. Oh, Jesus, thank God this isn't the first episode of this series. I'd like you to welcome my second guest of this series 25. She feels like the first, though, and she's probably best known for their appearance as the lingerie co-worker in the Chronicles of Kirk. Chronicle spelt with a K. I'm not sure, and there's three Ks in Chronicles of Kirk, so I'm not sure what it was about. She said she wouldn't do any racist material when she came backstage. Will you please welcome the incredible Eleanor Morton, ladies and gentlemen. Eleanor Morton, the Chronicles of Kirk. Come off of the Chronicles of Kirk. There you go. How are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
How do you feel about my Oh Jesus, I Have Promised material that you were poo-pooing backstage?
I have no reference frame for it, but it sounded very good.
Okay. All right.
Sounded really good.
Thanks, Eleanor. So lovely to see you. Thanks for coming along.
Thanks for having me.
You've been sick today.
I have been a little bit sick today.
Yeah. Are you feeling better now?
Yeah, probably.
Not with COVID or anything.
No, there's not COVID. It's not COVID. But when you say that, then then people think you have got COVID.
Yeah.
But I don't have COVID.
I mean, it might be something worse than COVID.
That's true. That's
more
nice, isn't
contagious.
It? Yeah. It might be. Yeah. It could be Ebola. Do you remember that?
It could be Ebola.
Throwback.
Could be monkeypox. That's the next one.
Could be monkeypox.
By the time this goes out, monkeypox.
Yep.
Everyone will have it. Can you tell us anything about the Chronicles of Kirk? Mm.
Yeah, actually, it was a blap. If anyone knows what a blap is,
okay.
It's Channel 4's. I didn't think this dress would be as. Hang on, cover the knees. Great radio. It was a Channel 4 blap, which is like a thing they do, like a short. You know, they're like, we don't think you're funny enough to have a series. Here's like 15 minutes, and then they think, oh, you are funny, but we don't have any money, so we're not going to make anything else. And my friend James Kirk, who is very funny, and won So You Think You're Funny in, I want to say 2010, long time ago. It was his one, and he's a very funny actor he was in 24. He's been
what?
An Outlander.
What?
I know, all
he
the classics.
He was in the Chronicles of Kirk as well.
The Chronicles of Kirk. And he said, do you want to play a bit part in this? And I had to play woman in lingerie warehouse, which I don't think is a thing. I don't think if you wear lingerie, you want to think of it being kept in a warehouse. And then he had to hold up some pants, and I had to just look at him in a judgy way.
That sounds good.
So that was an afternoon.
That's good. I think you'd be good at that.
Thank you. It was 80 quid and
wow.
Just up the road from my uni, so...
Perfect.
All nice good. Day out. Nice
All
day
good.
Out.
Well, that's what you're best known from, so that is good. I have been very much enjoying, and today I'm going back over through them, your online content, so I want to talk to you about first of all.
Yeah, you can do that.
Which is very, very funny.
Thank you.
How long have you been doing that? Because there was a few that were quite... Well, there's a few things I found on YouTube that seemed like quite a few years old.
Yeah, there was a period where everyone was trying to get online and everyone's agent was like, do online stuff. And we were all like, ugh. And I did make a couple of things about 5 years ago and was a bit scared of releasing them and then didn't really do any more. And then the pandemic hit and I stopped caring. And then it's amazing how that opens you up creatively.
But you do quite a lot of different things, which, you know, I think the people who kind of burst through often kind of plough one thorough.
Yeah.
And stick with it. But what I like about you is that there are some recurring
yes.
ideas, which are well worth it. The idea of the first one I saw was did Kenneth Graham get his idea for Wind in the Willows from a drunk guy in the pub?
Yep.
But you've done it.
One of my personal favourites.
And you've done a few of those.
I have done those. It's my it's me combining my enjoyment of comedy with my desperation for everyone to know more about Scottish authors. Kenneth Graham was Scottish, and I will tell everyone in the world that.
Yes.
Because no one ever knows that.
Well, and also, but they're very literary, and there's a lot of clever references in these things that
thank you.
The one that was J.R.R. Tolkien versus C.S. Lewis trying
yes.
to come up with the most ridiculous character name.
Yes.
I kind of thought you'd made up the character names, but then I Googled them and you hadn't made them up.
The silliest name was I didn't know existed till I Googled it, and I think he was meant. It was. Do you remember what it was? It was
a teleporno.
Teleporno. Which does any? Is there any Lord of the Rings nerds in? They know which character that was. It was Galadriel's husband. That guy. His original name was that, and then I guess his editors were like, "Come on." Come on, J-R-R-R-R. You can't do that. I always try and... You can tell that I'm a big sort of literature nerd, and obviously that was my degree. Massive surprise. I guess I like doing what the kids are calling edutainment, which is where you laugh and you learn.
Well, you do learn a lot. So, like, I've forgotten. Is Pan really in Wind of the Willows?
There's a weird chapter in Wind of the Willows that they never put in the adaptations, where Ratty and Mole are just walking along, and then Pan pops up playing his pipes, and it all gets weird and kind of Greek and sort of archaic and... weird, because there's a little mole in a waistcoat and then there's Pan, and it's he's just throwing it in, you know?
Why not have a go, you know? You assume with a kid's book no one's going to read that far. Just do what you want. Anyway, they're well worth watching. I mean, you know, you've got a YouTube channel, and there's many of these things up there, and they're all very funny. So I was trying to think, Leonardo da Vinci reading his Hate Mail is a very good one.
Historical Hate Mail is a series.
Yeah.
He was the first one. And I think I liked that because I found out some fun facts. Again, this is all like sort of based in reality, is that Leonardo da Vinci was really shit at finishing. He was a real procrastinator. So I'm talking like it would take him a decade to finish a mural. And so he would be constantly getting like angry letters from patrons being like, my kitchen's still half done. And he's like, I know, but I had this idea for this helicopter made of bricks and cheese. And I just thought it was really funny. And I just, you know, I think the thing I like about history is that everyone in history is exactly like everyone is now. And we think of them as quite proper and serious, but they were all people with weird quirks and flaws. And the Mark Steele... used to do a really good series called the Mark Steele Lectures, where he'd do a sort of sketch edutainment show on Radio 4 about people like that. And I think that's where I sort of picked up my joy in it, finding out how like annoying and weird people, like famous people in history were.
Yeah.
You know, you think of them as being very stoic and learned, but Leonardo was really weird.
He was, but there's also an element of, you know, you maybe venting your own disappointment at the kind of comments that maybe female comedians get online more than male comedians.
Yeah, you know, you've got to remind yourself that most people are very nice and just very nice. And the people who are the worst are just very vocal about it. And, you know, it's a little bit of fun, but no one's ever sent me any shit in the post, I should say. Okay, that does happen in the sketch. And, okay.
Well,
not yet.
Never say never.
After tonight.
There's definitely some people who listen to this who'll be well up for that.
Good.
That's fine. So you started stand up. I mean, you're still very young.
There you go.
Especially when you sit next to someone as decrepit as me.
I just wear a lot of sun cream.
But you started stand up at 18?
That
is young to a young age to start.
Yes.
What drew you into doing stand up and what?
I think I always loved comedy, and when I was very young, I used to listen to my dad's. He had all these Radio 4 show tapes like The Goon Show and Round the Horn and all these classics, and I got really into that. And then I think I got into stand-up through watching things like Black Books and then finding out that those guys were stand-ups and seeing their stuff. And then I just... I was on a school trip and I accidentally swore at a teacher, and he said I had to apologise in front of everyone, and I kind of turned it into a stand-up thing. And I think that was when I realised, like, oh, I'm really into this.
Was the teacher satisfied with that apology?
Yeah. He was fun. So it was fine. It was, but basically, long and short is that I because people sometimes go like, oh, you know, you must have been really nervous to start. But I was nervous about everything because I was very anxious.
Yeah.
So doing stand-up wasn't any scarier for me than, like, going to the shops. So it just, you know, didn't feel like a big leap.
Well, I was always, you know, I was really anxious about doing stuff like that.
Yeah.
For a long time, like going to a cafe on my own.
Yeah.
Or going, so often going into a shop. I've had real issues with it. But doing comedy, I don't think it ever really...
Well, that's the thing about comedy is it's the opposite of that because you've got all the power.
Yeah, okay.
And people have to let you talk at them.
Yeah.
Whereas in real life, those, you know, most comedians, I don't know about you, but most of the ones I know anyway, are introverts.
Yeah.
And that might be surprising to people, but actually this is where they feel the most comfortable. And then in the real world, that's where people are scary. And
I think that's true. And I suppose you know what the rules are in like,
yeah.
I think the part of the problem is sort of embarrassing yourself by not knowing what you're meant to be doing.
Yes.
Whereas on stage, you sort of, even though you might embarrass yourself in front of more people, you at least know what the rules are.
And you can sort of pretend it was part of the thing and then run off stage and leave early. And
so how early, so because you did a show about anxiety which you can watch on Next Up.
Oh yes,
so you've got a couple of shows on Next Up.
Yes.
That was called Lollipop.
It was
right. So how early on in your career was that?
That was when I was 22,
right?
And I think that so I did my first hour when I was 22, and the reason I did that was in the world of comedy, a lot of people spend a lot of time building up to this hour. And they do years of, like, they'll go to the Fringe and they'll do, like, 40 minutes. And then they'll do, like, 45 minutes. And then, you know, so that they're eligible for the award, basically.
Yeah.
Which we all are guilty of, hoping we might win. But it just... And I just thought, if I spend, like, 5 years building 1 hour, I'll never do anything else. I'm just going to do it. It's not going to be good. It's not going to win anything. But I'll have it done. And then I can do another one and another one. And it'll hopefully get better. So... So people are like, whoa, that was a crazy young age to do it. And it was, but I think for me it was probably the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And I didn't invite any reviewers or press, but everyone turned up because they were like, ooh, you're fresh and young. And then they were like, oh, it's not that good actually. And I was like, I know, I didn't ask you to come. It is actually a very good show, so do watch it, please. But, you know, I didn't go into it with like, this is my debut, these are my genius thoughts. It was just like, I want to see if I can do an hour, and I'm going to do an hour. And I could.
You could. But it's interesting to see that now, because it is 8 years ago or something.
Yeah.
It's a while ago. So it's interesting to compare that to you now. It's sort of interesting now that those early stand-up shows often are filmed or recorded in some way and still exist.
Yeah,
and obviously
yeah.
This is in quite a high-profile place. So it's kind of interesting to see how much you've changed in those 8 years. Because it's probably, and to be fair, not many people were doing the kind of mental illness shows 8 years ago. And it's about anxiety.
No, you can't bloody move for them.
And so it was kind of ahead of its time as well. But it's...
I'll take that.
But it's good. I've really enjoyed it.
But it's
interesting to see how much you've developed in those 8 years as well.
Yeah, and also just, I think, being more comfortable on stage and whole bunch. And I used to do more musical comedy, and I don't anymore because it's impossible to be a female musical comedian. everyone hates it. And also I got tired of carrying things. I'm very lazy. So I'd like to go back to it. But yeah, no, it's very different. That was seven shows ago.
Yeah, right. So you've done it. It's not a show every year, but it is every year. You could probably have done a show.
Yes, but because I'm from Edinburgh and it doesn't cost me nearly as much money to do a show every year.
In fact, if you sublet a room, you could be in profit quite quickly.
I actually moved into my... I moved back to Edinburgh and I moved into my flat, and the girl who'd had it before me, who I knew, phoned me and said I had to tell my job to the letting agent, and she phoned me saying, they've just phoned me in a panic saying that they think that you're just going to, because you're a comedian, you've just decided you're going to get the flat for the Fringe and then abandon it. And I was like, I'm not, but that's a great idea. Like, just rent a normal flat for a normal price for a month and then disappear. Don't do that.
It's a very good idea, and I'm going to do it next year. that will make my whole Edinburgh much more enjoyable.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How was Edinburgh this year? You were on at this more or less the same time as my show, so I couldn't come and see
you. Midday. Do you like a midday show?
I don't mind it. And I was on at one doing like a podcast, so it was. I haven't done stand up that early. I've done a few shows. Like, I've done shows in the morning. It's a little bit harder. I think in the 90s, people used to go and have a day planner and watch stuff all day. And I think it's harder to get people to come and see things in the day now. So.
Yeah. Well, and if there's not an app to help them do that. But yeah, no, I always do all my shows sort of early in the day because I think I'm more scared of... Most comedians the other way around, but if an audience is bad, I'd rather they were sober and quiet than loud and drunk, which I know sounds mad, but that's my kink, I guess. So,
I think you're always quite. I mean, the shows I've seen, I watched a couple of shows on Next Up, and the other stuff I've seen. You're quite brave with your openings. The other show on Next Up, which is called Great Title, Glamorous Photo, starts with you like in the character of like an American
glamorous American stand-up, comedian stand-up,
which you know you sense from the audience watching. They aren't quite sure. They don't seem sure whether you are you or they've seen something else. So it's quite a bold decision to start a show as something you're not and taking the mickey out.
I actually started my second show as a Geordie tour guide for a mining museum. And I can't remember why. I thought it was funny. I think I don't know how to start shows, so I just think I'll do 10 minutes of character and then... pretend, like, if people don't get it, I'll just pretend it didn't happen.
But I like, because the audience are, like, bemused, and I like it. I think it's, but then they have to work out what's
I think I've got
happening.
I think I've got a bit of a thing sometimes, which is not really good for my career, but what I enjoy is sometimes is confusing people more than making them laugh, which, again, is not, I know that's not great, but it's quite fun for me. It's fun.
As long as you make them laugh after you've confused them, which you do. But people are laughing, but it's a bold decision.
Yes, you can see people are confused, especially if they've never... Especially if they don't really go to any comedy.
Well, I think in Edinburgh, you know, people come to see people, they take a chance or something, so they might not have known...
Yeah,
but you weren't a quite bad American comedian.
It's just me
or
doing
quite generic
dick jokes for 10 minutes.
Yeah,
the kind of that I would never do because I am a prude. And you can tell people like, is it an hour of this? and it wasn't, which is good because I could only write 10. I don't know. I just I quite like my shows are quite stand-up-y apart from those kind of bits, so I think I like just having a bit of playing around.
Yeah, no, it's good. I'm saying it's bold and it's what an Edinburgh show or a tour show should be anyway. I think, and it's and you should be experimenting and finding out.
Well, that's what it's for, isn't it? It's like that's what the Fringe is for. Is and that's why it's nice as an audience member as well to go because sometimes you see stuff and you're like, I don't know if I like that, but I'm glad I saw it because it was totally different, and that's what art should be. I don't know.
And so what was this year's show about? Because it was a lockdown show, right?
It was,
I think, surprisingly, Tim Key did a show about lockdown.
Yeah.
And not that many people did a lockdown. Sorry, Tim Key did a lockdown show. Not many people did. It didn't seem to be a theme, which you thought it might be.
Yeah, I think when it was happening, I was thinking, like, lockdown, not the show. I was thinking, oh, everyone's going to do a lockdown show and everyone's going to be sick of hearing about it and talking about it. And, you know, and then what am I going to talk about? But it was sort of about the very British problem I think we have with justifying having a rest, which is sort of what the pandemic was.
Yeah.
Feeling like we should be productive all the time and doing something all the time, and suddenly having 2 years where we didn't do anything. And also, how do you square a very traumatic global catastrophe in which you had quite a nice time? How do you deal with that? And I think there was a few people who did have quite a nice... Did anyone here have quite a nice time? Yeah, yeah, you see? It was so in ways... Because also I sort of got, I got internet successful, quote-unquote, at that point, and I did a whole bunch of other stuff that I think has made my life better. So it's that kind of thing of, like, if we hadn't had a terrible pandemic... would I be sad? Some shit did happen, to clarify, to justify that. It was all great.
75,000 people
died. I meant to me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, so it's like the guilt of that. And then also it's sort of about, well, there's obviously a load of jokes in it as well. Because I feel like when I can never describe fringe shows and make them sound funny. Because I was going to the theme and stuff.
It's hard, but you don't have to. But you don't have to do that. But it's interesting. And you climbed a mountain. Is that what you did in lockdown?
A mountain in Scotland called Shehalion, which was going to be the title of the show, and then my agent was like, "People don't know what that means," and so obviously we can't have any Scottish words at the Edinburgh Fringe. That would be mad. So yeah, it was about doing that and how that was my only achievement for the year, and how I felt like I should be doing more somehow. I think that's probably quite a Scottish thing as well, like the Presbyterian work ethic of, you know, like just constantly having to justify a sit down or just any kind of relaxation. You know, you've got to be out there doing stuff. So it was a difficult time for Scottish people.
Yeah.
So we're all guilty about having a little rest.
And how, as an Edinburgh resident,
yeah,
how did you feel? I mean, it's sort of weird. The Fringe only finished like a week ago, right? So it's
10,000 years in comedian.
It is. Well, it's such a weird thing. I mean, it feels endless while you're there, and then it feels like it didn't happen the minute you've left. So it's a weird like time distortion. So it's weird to think it's only a week ago since it's finished. But did you? I mean, obviously there was the bins strike, which has been
that's
been sorted
resolved,
out now,
which is great.
It just sort of happened. I was just leaving, and the couple of days before I was leaving, I was thinking Edinburgh's smelling a bit badder than this year. But I just put it down to the hot weather.
Yeah, the first couple of days I just thought Edinburgh looked shit because Edinburgh does tend to look shit halfway through the Fringe.
Yeah.
And then I realised it was actually industrial action happening. This was on purpose. It wasn't just 10,000 tourists dropping chip wrappers everywhere. But it was. It got a bit grim towards the end because my show was in the Cowgate, and if you know Edinburgh, that's like a sort of like a giant alley, I would describe, in the old town, which is like this sort of. And in the rest of the year, like, it's not like a fun place to hang out. It's like it's quite a staggy, henny place. It's just got bars and pubs and that's it. So it's already not a great place to hang out. And then walking through it every day to get to my venue was a bit, I guess I could really connect to the people of the 19th century Edinburgh who lived in those conditions all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, just seeing all those crisp packets and things. That's and what they flyers have, made me think, I've suffered too.
Did it? I was just wondering if it encroached into people's shows, though, because there's someone, the ice cream shop man on the Cowgate said he couldn't sell ice cream because it smelled too bad.
So horrible.
People don't want to eat ice cream when it stinks of shit.
Yeah. And I just thought, well, not if you have that attitude. It felt okay in the venues themselves. It's just sort of when you went outside and you saw I didn't see any rats, which I actually thought was a big... which I thought was a real achievement, not seeing any rats.
Yeah, there were rats though, right? The rats were out.
I believe they were out. Yeah. Again, there's a couple of streets in the middle of town, and I do love Edinburgh, I want to clarify. There's a couple of streets in the middle of town where it was hard to tell there was a bin strike on. There's a couple of venues that have a permanent atmosphere that, you know, it's sort of hard to tell if people were trying to make a point.
Okay, fair enough. And what about...
I'm not going to be allowed back now.
Okay, but you won't, that's fine. You can stay here. You know, maybe, as you say, you had somewhere to stay, so it wasn't quite as bad. But do you? It felt to me, I was trying to process it a lot during the time, because I think a lot of it is, for me, is I'm old, and so like I don't want to be the guy going, oh, the Fringe was much better in the 80s and 90s when...
Well, when the bins were collected.
When the bins were collected, and I'm sure they were. But it felt like... It felt like this year that it was, you'd have to be pretty rich to come and perform or view the Edinburgh Fringe.
Yeah, I was really interested. I'd like to know what people thought from like a audience perspective, because to me it felt really busy and mad and intense and a bit oversaturated, like they're trying to stuff everything in at once. And then also that kind of highlighted how expensive and sort of untenable it is for most people. I think a lot of people this year came away thinking like, the Fringe is weird. It's weird. Why do we do this for a month and have one day off? Why do we do this mad thing where we spend thousands of pounds? I think the best way to describe the Fringe, like as a performer, I've come up with a great analogy. It's like a month long freshers week that is also exam time. So you're just constantly stressed and hungover, and everything's awful. And everyone's like, oh, I mean, no, it's not, it's great. But, you know, people do come up and your, you know, non-comedian friends, you get the impression they think you're having a laugh. And it's quite hard work. I know it looks like we're all just getting drunk and we are, but... But you have to, you know, it's very high pressure. Unless you're just chill the whole time, just having a nice sitting back and relaxing.
I didn't drink, but I did not have a particularly nice time. I had two small children with me, which is a stupid thing.
I had a couple of friends who had kids with them, and I don't know.
Well, no, it was nice going to see shows with them when I could, but my show was on at a time when most of the kids' shows were on, so that was a bit more difficult for me. But then my wife was working at night, so I had to look after the kids at night.
If you didn't know she was a comedian, that would sound very mysterious. My wife's working at night. She's
got to make the money back somehow.
That kind of brings up the Fringe debate. This is all very kind of fringy, but the Matt Ford incident.
Oh yes,
we call it. we don't. Someone brought a baby into his show, and I don't know if people are aware of this, but it was very contentious because then it started this conversation about, is it okay to have children in shows? I had a couple of kids in my show. On the last day, there was a toddler in with her parents, but. It was a bit like, you can't be like, no, you can't come in, because they paid for a ticket and they obviously want to see you, and you're like, well, thank you very much. But also, like, she was three as well, which is the prime age to be the worst audience member. She's going to be very bored, and I'm going to be very... I'm going to look like a monster if I send this woman out. So, did you have any...
We had a baby in one day because I can't remember which one it was. Maybe the Ed Gamble show. There was there was a cry at a point that we could make a joke. I think as a parent, you just, if your kids are making a noise, you have to take them
very
out.
Very small babies, I'm not as bothered about, because again, you just take them out. But toddlers, that can't be fun for the toddler.
That's bad. I want that, but you know.
I can
see both sides of it, but I think as a parent, you've got to be responsible and take them out. I once had, like, I think it was Hitler Moustache. I once had, which was like sort of in the rat. So there was seats to the side of me. It was 150 seats, and like 10 of the seats were either side and the front. And I think the entire front rows were taken up with some Spanish kids about 13 years old who didn't really speak English, and that was the worst. I mean, it was A, great, I've sold some tickets, but B, it kind of made it really difficult to play, and they couldn't understand. And I think it was Hitler Moustache, yeah, which must have been really...
What do you think they came away thinking that show was?
What they thought was good. I mean, you know, they're Spanish, they might be thinking, great, this is returning. And, oh, he's not really doing much fascist stuff. So yeah, that was that. You know, you do kind of get, but I quite enjoy having an inappropriately young person in an audience because you can mess around with them.
And when they're old enough, because I had a 14-year-old in, and when they're old enough to kind of enjoy it, like my show isn't age inappropriate. I don't talk about anything that I talk about stuff children might not care about.
Yeah.
But nothing I don't think that would like traumatize them. So. It's more like I'm like, please don't get bored and look at me like you're bored. That's awful. I don't care if I traumatise you with my material, but heaven forfend that I feel like you're not having a good time. But, you know, I had a 14-year-old and I think he liked it, although I did immediately ask him his age and he went and he didn't respond. And I was like, oh, yay, this is going to be fun. Because that's the only question you ever need to answer from a comedian. If you just need to say your age, where you're from, and your job, and then we'll leave you alone. So it was a bit stressful, but I think he liked it.
Yeah,
I didn't want to make him feel, you know, I also didn't want to make him feel like I was going, what the hell are you doing here?
Yeah,
it's just you've got to talk about it because other people.
Sort of, you sort of have to address it, and you most comedians will have fun with that situation. I think I don't know what exactly happened in Matt's show, but it sounds like it was completely disturbing the show. But then, I think he's right. It's sort of right to say, well, take the baby out and come back when it stopped crying. But
yeah, I think it was like a wedding. I guess it's like, this is very contentious. You know, children at weddings, people have strong views. Do you take the child out, or I don't know? Do people have strong views? Does anyone?
Well, often people don't want kids at their wedding. It has to be said.
Yeah.
Because it's a reminder of what terrible things are about to happen. You don't want them to let them know that they're making the worst mistake of their life. They're giving up their freedom. You can't go out in Edinburgh at night because you've got to stay in and look after your kids. It's a terrible... It's the best thing ever, of course, if my kids are listening. It really is. Yeah, the christening I went to, the girl who was being christened, was like a toddler, so she was running, she could speak. And she was, but it's sort of charming, she was running around and shouting, she'd got some paint on her christening dress, it was kind of quite sweet.
Yeah.
The vicar was very relaxed, unlike Matt Ford, but that's because he's, you know, Matt Ford's going to hell, and because the vicar knows he's safe. He was very like, this is all fine, and she was shouting out.
I guess that's about her though, so.
Yeah, it was her day.
Because I also had I want to say he was 8, and I could be wrong, I had an 8-year-old in, okay. and his parents were very nice, and they'd come from the Netherlands to see me, so I'm very much like, thank you so much for coming. But it was funny, because I came up to the venue, and I saw them outside, and I just instinctively went, is that child coming in? And without thinking. And then his mum said, yes, but don't worry, he won't be bored. And I was like, oh, good. I was really worried. And he played computer games on his phone the whole time.
Right.
And it was like, I guess that's fine. Like, I can see it in my I don't know. But then you don't want to be like, don't come. Ah, yeah. Oh, it's tricky. But he was very nice afterwards. He said I did a great show. So he was very confident.
He probably got confused between the video game and you.
I think so.
Caught up in his virtual reality.
He was playing insert game with ginger character. I can't think of anyone. Tails.
Oh, Tails the fox.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. That's a ginger. That's a ginger.
I'll
character.
Take it. Crash back. No, all right. I feel insulted by that one actually. Yeah. Like to. No, but it's not really pretty, is he? I don't know that one, but I'll take it. And then I'll Google it later and be very upset. I think he was playing some kind of FIFA football thing.
Okay.
Can't think of any footballers that I would resemble either, so...
Can't think of any ginger football players.
Apart from Gavin...
Dave Tozer from Fairlands Middle School. He was auburn head.
Yeah, there you go.
He was good at football.
Yeah. There's loads of them.
Four skulls.
But you can't picture them, can you?
No, I can't because I've got aphantasia. So that's my. I can't see anything. You know, you kids come out. It's cool to be mentally ill now.
Yeah.
Not just pretend to be mentally ill like me. I'm very sane. There's no. In our generation of comedians, there were no mentally ill people. And now they're all coming out that would work.
I do enjoy when older people, older than you, they sort of complain about mental health being a thing now, while being obviously quite mentally, at least needing therapy.
Yeah, and men of my generation, especially men of my generation, absolutely all. I mean, the number who go over the edge.
Oh, yeah.
As they get into their 50s, it's quite terrible. I mean,
it's awful, and it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
So that's mine.
I mean, I'm normal. I just play myself at snooker and have puppets that I sort of clear stones off a field, and I am fine. Don't worry about it. I will ask you some emergency questions now.
Dun, 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 dun.
From my new emergency questions book. I overestimated the size of it. I thought I'll cut out all the best ones of the books. I'll probably need a massive A4 book.
You didn't have confidence in yourself. You clearly thought I'll need a lot of emergency.
Well, you know, by the end, I've been going for 10 years. I reckon I can fill that. I've got all the lyrics to Oh Jesus, I Have Promised. Because I was going to ask you, what tune do you use for the hymn of Oh Jesus, I Have Promised? And yeah, well, you can make up your own one. We did it with the Muppets. It worked quite well. Right. I'll tell you this story, and we'll see if there's an emergency question in this. I lost my glasses. Last time I went to get glasses about a year ago.
Yeah.
I got two pairs like this, exactly the same, because you got an offer. But they were quite expensive.
Yeah.
Within about a month, I lost one of the pairs of glasses completely. I looked all over the house. And and the other day I went all around the house again looking for them and checked all the mantelpieces and everything, couldn't find them. Yesterday I came to bed and the extra pair of glasses were on the tiny bedside table by my bed, right? This big. And I kind of went, what? How is that possible? And it turned out that I hadn't gone mad. My wife had been making the bed and the glasses had fallen out. But we'd made the bed every week for 10 months.
Yeah.
And they were trapped in the bed and they'd come out there. And so I was very relieved to find them again because they're expensive. My emergency question is, what's the weirdest way that you have found something that you thought was lost?
Oh, that's interesting. Oh, my God.
It's quite a hard one.
That is really hard.
Yeah. I thought I'd start with a hard one. It's weird, don't it? That, and then imagine if my wife just said, no. I haven't seen that. They've been there the whole time, Rich. For 10 months.
Wait, sorry, but you still have the other pair?
I've got both pairs. If I hadn't had the other pair, I would have just assumed they were my pair.
Yeah.
But I had a pair on my head, and then I picked them up and I was like, it was like I was in the Twilight Zone for a second.
Was it a ghost?
It could have been a ghost.
Could have been a ghost. That's my theory. Yeah. I haven't found it again, but I have lost something where, like, You can't picture how on earth it could be lost.
Yeah.
And you do start to think about parallel dimensions. When I was five, I was in a production of Peter Pan playing a very non-PC Native American character. It was just me in a... It was just a little dress, but we shouldn't do that. Weird choice for a play. Anyway, it was a ballet thing, and my mum made the costumes, and they were in a bag by the door, and they just disappeared. Like, I'm talking disappeared, guys. And maybe someone stole them? But do you know when something goes missing and you're like, there's no explanation?
Yeah.
Like your glasses.
My glasses.
But then they turned up. But these costumes never turned up. But
maybe
if you see...
Maybe they'll just be by your bed when you get home tonight. Now, that would be... Or in the hotel you're staying. Imagine if you got into the hotel tonight and just laid out on your bed was... In fact, can we arrange? Can we arrange for that to happen? Because that would be fucking awesome.
I just wonder. Maybe I'll go back to Edinburgh and one day I'll just see a man wandering around. Whoever nicked them, it'd be great if you could fit into them. But they are for 5-year-olds. But yeah,
Good. I'm going to ask you... No, I'm just going to say it was easier, but this is still... This is a hard question as well. I'm going to ask you hard ones.
Why are your emergency questions hard?
Because, you know, it's because they're... You're right, they should be easy because they're for an emergency. But, yeah, that's not the way I roll.
No.
If you could go into a chrysalis like a caterpillar would...
Oh, okay.
Dissolve like a caterpillar would...
Yeah.
And then reform and come out of the chrysalis, yeah. But you get to choose what you come out of the chrysalis as... Could be something completely different. It could be you, slightly changed, whatever you want. What would you emerge from the chrysalis as?
Me with more confidence. No, that's really sad. I don't know. Like an animal or something, maybe? A squirrel. You'd be... No, that's rubbish.
You said squirrel, and so that's what it... That's psychologically...
I don't know. They just, you know, they have a good time.
They have a pretty good time. They don't have any cares. They play with their nuts.
They do. They've got no predators that I'm aware of.
Yeah, they do.
Do they?
Yeah.
Foxes.
Well, I mean, any larger animal. Yeah.
I don't know why I was so confident about that.
People will shoot them.
That's embarrassing.
Jeremy Paxman shoots them out of his toilet window.
Actually, yeah, my grandpa used to throw stones at them. Yeah. You know what?
They have a terrible life. And then it depends what colour squirrel.
Well, you're going to be red? Squirrel.
Yeah, because this is where we're going.
But
are the red ones the ones that have been wiped out by the other ones? Yeah. So you'd be the worst possible squirrel to be.
What does that say about
But you'd fight back against the grey squirrels.
Yeah.
And
oh, no, I think it's the metaphor's going.
The squirrel war.
It's a weird undertone. When we were growing up, my sister always insisted there was an albino squirrel. Like living near us, and she'd be like, "I saw it today," and we'd be like, "Yeah." And then I saw it like 2 years ago. And I was like, "Oh my god, she wasn't lying."
It can't be the same.
There's probably a family of them.
Yeah, there's probably a genetic thing going down the
squirrel line,
of Edinburgh,
or some kind of squirrel origin story where it fell in a vat of something, and I don't know. Has anyone here seen an albino squirrel? Yeah. See.
There's a famous one in Carshorton. Yeah, I mean, is that just because there's nothing else in Carshorton? And there's a famous... If you go to Carshorton, everyone will tell you about the albino squirrel.
It's the same thing, though. People either see it and go, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, because...
But a lot of people go, yeah, you're just making that up for the Carshorton tourist industry. You've never seen it. You have seen it.
What if we Google that Carl Shorten white squirrel after this, and it comes up with local Carl Shorten man keeps lying about pretend albino squirrel.
You know, I'm going to go to Carl Shorten now to see if I can say it. So it's worked. You've got a pub, have you? Oh yeah. You haven't got a pub.
It's called the White Squirrel.
Oh, yeah, I've got. I'm from Carl Shorten. There's an albino squirrel. I run a pub there. Don't you come here with your lies. Sitting here on your own in the second row. You haven't got a pub. What's it called? The Hope.
Hope you see a squirrel. I don't know.
I'm coming, mate. I'm coming in. I can't go tomorrow. I'm going to come on Wednesday. Is Carshorton? I don't even know where Carshorton is.
South London.
Is it? Oh, it sounds like a pain in the ass. Sounds like a pain in the ass. How's the pub business going down in South London? Is it over after lockdown? Are you surviving? Very well.
People haven't given up alcohol. It's
almost
like it's addictive.
Right. I have given up alcohol, so... What non-alcoholic beers have you got on tap?
I've got them in bottles.
It's well done, thank you. I'll pop down. I'll ask you another question. He's given me that guy from the Carl Shorten, the old albino squirrel guy.
See?
He's a good guy.
So if people see you in Carl Shorten with binoculars, that's why.
I am going to ask you another emergency question, then we're going to get back talking about your wonderful life. We haven't got that long to go.
I've seen that film.
I don't know. Well, let me see what... Well, there was one that I was going to ask. I thought, why have I put this in here? I'm going to ask it. What one photo/song would you send out to aliens in a spacecraft if you could choose any... You can have a photo and a song. You know, they did it with the Voyager spacecraft. They felt it was quite controversial because Carl Sagan, I think, had to choose song they put in there. And there was a big argument about which song. And it's difficult, isn't it? Choose one song.
Can I choose a very short video clip?
Yeah.
Can I put in that time that woman put that cat in the bin? I think that really sums up Humanity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a warning, cruel. It's a warning to
but
the
also
aliens.
Tidy.
Yeah. I wonder if the aliens would be able to comprehend that it was
a
bad
thing. I think it transcends language,
so?
And yeah.
Do you think aliens all have bins?
I think they've got some kind of receptacle.
They've got receptacles, and they know you shouldn't put smaller alien creatures in them. That's a good answer.
Yeah. I wonder where she is now.
Oh, she'll be on I'm a Celebrity soon, won't she? It's about her. They'll come back, and they're all allowed to come back, and it's fine. What is the most right-wing person that you've ever been sexually attracted to?
Oh, fuck. That's a good question. You know...
I like all of them. I want to fuck or be fucked by all of them. Or both. I want to be pegged by...
Yeah?
Prince William.
I guess is Prince Harry right wing?
I mean, I don't think I'm.
I mean,
gonna
he was. He did literally dress up as a Nazi, which is feels pretty right wing. But
he dressed up as a Nazi, and he is from a very posh family. But I feel.
I want to clarify. I was not attracted to him as a Nazi.
Okay. Is it just the red hair? You're just trying to propagate the red hair.
You know, we're not dying out. That's a myth. But but we will if we don't get on it. So yeah. We've okay. really got to. No, but he is objectively the hottest of the two. Of the whole family, I would say. Anyone? Yeah?
Anyone?
Princess
Michael of Kent was pretty good looking. I mean, maybe not now. I'm not sure if she's still alive now.
Who's
I mean, Lady Diana was nice, but again, not so much
yes,
now.
No.
But still better than most of them now.
Yeah. Too soon. But, you know... That's Harry's mum, so that's why.
She flirted with me.
Did she?
Yeah, Wimbledon. I was in the royal box in Wimbledon. That's not a euphemism. And I was next to the royal box. And because I went out with the actress Sally Phillips, who's a guest on the show in a couple of weeks. Next week. And her dad was a famous tennis player, Tim Phillips. So he got good seats at the Royal Box. And then I was looking at... It was William. He was little then.
Oh.
It's weird how that happens. And he had loads of hair. And I was looking over them and she sensed my gaze.
Oh.
And she turned around and I didn't know what to do.
How old were you then?
I was like 25.
Okay,
something
okay.
Like. So age. I pulled a face at her. Went...
Okay,
and
yeah.
She laughed. And then she gave me a really sexy look.
Oh. Can you do the look, even though it's
you know the look? It was the.
Oh yeah.
And everyone around and Sally didn't see any of this, but everyone else around me was laughing. Ooh, and they'd all sit and they're all laughing. So then I went back to Buckingham Palace and fucked later night. Not all of the story is true, but I reckon I could have if I'd known. It's like, oh, would you think in that situation, if you were Sally Phillips in that situation, and
if
I said,
this
is my once in a lifetime opportunity to have sex with Princess Diana, who may die in the next 3 or 4 years, I could bring her the happiness that she hasn't had.
Did you arrive
in
at the palace in a white Fiat Uno?
You'd have to let it go. If that was now, and it was my when I was married, and Katie would have to say, you're allowed to go and have sex.
Yeah, I think that's pretty standard.
She'd
but
have to say.
Who do you think she would?
Oh, she's not allowed to. She wouldn't be allowed in return. There's no one there. You know, if it's Lady Diana.
Yeah. And obviously she would have been very into this, obviously, so yeah. It's all fine. But, I mean, probably fine, yeah.
Okay.
There you go.
Would you have your ex-partner from 25 years ago as a guest on your podcast? And would you be a bit nervous about that? When it kind of ended quite badly, the relationship.
Are you going to ask that question?
I don't know, we'll see. I'm quite scared. Quite scared about what's going to happen. You do quite a lot of writing. You're a script writer as well.
Yes.
So is that quite serious? You wrote a play or a TV script about Bonnie and Reed?
Oh, yeah, sitcom script. It was not serious.
It wasn't serious.
It was Mary Read and Anne Bonny, have you heard
of them? Yeah, I have. That's why I thought it might be
They're in.
I thought it might be an historical
Yes, it
but
was.
But I thought it might be serious.
Historical comedy. It's kind of like a workplace comedy set on a pirate ship.
Great.
About being the only women in an office, but the office is the pirate ship.
Yeah. That sounds like a fantastic idea.
Yeah, it was really fun, and it did as well as it could have done without getting made.
Okay.
By which I mean it was optioned several times.
Yeah.
So I got paid, but it, you know, didn't get made. But I think, like the videos I make, that kind of worked the best because you just kind of write what you really enjoy.
Yeah.
And don't try and second guess what you think people might like. They are very cool historical figures. Two female pirates from the 17th century, hung out with a couple of other famous pirates, disguised themselves as men, had a fun time. And then I sort of wrote a very silly script, which is a bit like, and Taika Waititi is welcome to take notes, Our Flag Means Death. So you can't really make it now.
Okay.
Because they'll say, well, we've made Our Flag Means Death. So.
Yeah. I think there's room for two pirates.
Two pirates. Well, if it was up to me, it would be wall-to-wall pirate sitcoms. But
it's quite hard. I've tried to do quite some historical sitcoms, and they're hard to get off the ground.
They really are, because that's basically all I want to write, which is a shame. But yeah. They're very scared of the expensive, which I get. You know, it's expensive, but you can do it with a set. No one's gonna complain if your sitcom is not historically, you know, like Blackadder was sets, and no one, you know, we can all suspend disbelief. Yeah. We don't have to shoot it on the high seas, so I said desperately to the producer as they turned me away. They are, though. It's funny what TV will put a lot of money into and what it's scared to put money into, and how often the thing it does put a lot of money into didn't need as much money in it.
Yeah,
I think I've got a point here. I don't know. I could watch, you know, like teleplays. I could watch, if the actors were good and they were just doing it like this, I could watch the sitcom there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not this, but
two people sitting in chairs. Yeah. It could be a sitcom.
Yeah.
It's only the Larry Sanders
Friends.
Show. The Larry Sanders show's done it already. So, you know, it could almost
people
be.
Have watched it in the past. So
you never know.
But
it
yeah.
is frustrating writing scripts, though, and it's very, you know, that's
yes.
that's what I was just doing like one a year, more or less. And then they're all failing at different stages. I think I got slightly closer than yours in that we made a 10-minute test.
Oh, yeah, that counts, yeah.
So that's as close as you can get
without
even making a pilot.
You want to have lots of different scripts on the go so that they can all fail at different points.
Yeah, it's true. Well,
you feel like you're going, you know, you're always doing something.
Have you really written for the Beano?
I do write for the Beano. Right. I don't know if they'll be annoyed that I've mentioned this, because I did mention it in a show once, and then my boss was like, don't mention the Beano. So maybe cut this, but
okay.
I write content for the Beano.
You know it's on your website that you write for the
Beano. It is, isn't it? It's fine. No, it's fine. Put this in. No, it's. I don't write the Beano. That would be really cool. I write the sort of kids' website.
Okay.
So quizzes and facts and things. So, okay. Which is, I really enjoy doing. It's a lovely job.
Yeah, and you do. You
Please
write,
don't fire me.
You're a program associate, which means you write the jokes for lots of panel shows.
That's a little behind the scenes fact there. If you see program associates, it means joke writer, but we want to pretend.
It's all made up.
Yeah, it's all off the cuff. I've done a lot of that kind of stuff, which is fun. I think the good thing about writing topical comedy, like news stuff, is it's like working out. It's sort of you get good at doing it, or you get passable at doing those topical jokes as quickly as possible, which is what you need when you're writing a show like that.
Yeah.
So it feels like you're doing training, you know. And I'm really glad Boris Johnson isn't Prime Minister anymore for various reasons.
He still is Prime Minister at this exact moment as we speak.
because I can't write.
I still don't think.
You don't think he's going to go?
I don't think he'll go.
I was very surprised
For months I've been saying Boris Johnson will still be the Prime Minister when this goes out. If he's still Prime Minister when this goes out, that will be quite impressive.
It will. But you know what? If anyone can do it. If anyone can refuse to leave. Because you can't get fired as a Prime Minister, can you? Can you? No, you just have to... It, it doesn't it just depend on you doing the right thing and stepping down?
I mean, I think you could stay in 10 Downing Street and I don't know what they would do.
Yeah, this is what I mean. And I think he would do that. So how do you get rid of him? Anyway, I'm glad Percival. I don't have to write any more topical jokes about him.
Yeah.
For now.
For now. He might be back. He could well
I
be back.
I think he will be back, yeah.
And so are you going to tour your Edinburgh show?
That would be nice, yeah. I had a... Because it's just finished. I'm sort of in a weird headspace where I don't know what's happening. But yes, that would be an idea. And also I did Craig the Tour Guide, which is one of my characters. I did that live and I'd like to do that live again. So
terrific.
So yeah.
Well, they're really brilliant stand-up shows. You can see two of them at Next Up, which is very well worth subscribing to if you like stand-up comedy shows, because there's a lot of...
There's loads of great stuff, yeah.
There's lots of, especially up-and-coming comedians. There's one of mine on there as well. they've got some old people on there as well. Are you ever mistaken for Miss Australia 1980?
Constantly. I also noticed that, because her name is Eleanor Morton, and she's got a Wikipedia page.
She does.
I noticed when my profile went up a bit, the Wikipedia page got a lot more detailed. She was like, I don't know who's Googling me, but I better make it worth their while. sisters are in there. Everything you want to know about her, check her out.
I did check her out. I thought that's who I was booking, to be fair. And I'm quite disappointed the way things have turned. Well, look, is there anything else coming up that you want to plug? Have you got
Probably. I should have known that you were going to ask this and then remembered. I'm part of Weirdos Collective. We're going to do another Halloween show. That's going to be very silly and fun. It's called The Envelopes, and we did a version of it at Leicester Comedy Festival at the start of the year, and we got nominated for the award. It's very funny.
Very good.
And Adam Larter, the creator of Weirdos, puts a lot of time and far too much money into it, so please come and and validate that. And yes, hopefully I'll be doing the show, and if I think of anything else, can I tweet you about it?
Yeah, tweet me about it, and I will try and do an impression of you.
That yes,
we'll just slip it in.
Absolutely, yeah.
Again, also, hey.
That's it.
Also, I'm in the new Star Trek film.
Are you Miss Australia 1980?
I don't know what I'm doing exactly. I'm glad you weren't sick during the podcast.
Me too.
And thank you very much for coming. Please give it up for the amazing Eleanor Morton, ladies and gentlemen. Eleanor Morton. We'll be back next week. Stay for next week. David Rush. You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Eleanor Morton. Thank you to Scant Regard for playing this music. I am indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. I am also indebted to Chris Evans, not that one, and everyone from Go Past the Stripe. Thank you to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre for having us. And thank you for turning the lights on and blinding me during this bit. It was very exciting. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFastTheStripe.com production for the internet. Go to GoFastTheStripe.com for more stuff.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thanks for listening. Go to gofasterstripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can, and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.